Colorado Media School campus in Lakewood, Colorado. The premier radio show on GoMileHigh.com. This is The Press Box.
And welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Press Box on GoMileHigh.com and part of the Be On Air Network. I am your host today, Squirrel. I got Tanner the Foods with me and KJ the Goat TT.
What's up, guys?
Man, we good, man. We just here in the studio ready to, like Mark Mosier would say, get it on, baby.
Get it on. What's up, Tanner?
Feeling good, man. I'm ready to talk about some sports. We have a lot of activity in all of the four major sports. And again,
yes,
I'm just loving this right now.
It's the beauty of getting first crack at it out of the weekend.
Speaking of that, game two, East semifinals is going on right now. The Raptors are up 23-19 on the Celtics. We have a lot of, like you said, a lot of stuff to talk about today. We are going to actually jump right into our headlines today.
Some things going on in sports today that will make your brain fall out of your skull.
Because I've got nothing here. You're giving me baseball and hockey, and I got my keister blowing in the wind.
It's sports.
All around the clock. Sports all the time.
That's the concept of the news.
Oh, that's never going to work. That's ridiculous.
Thank you for that, Ron Burgundy. We're going to send it right to Tanner for our headlines today.
Starting us off here in the world of football, one of two headlines regarding some NFL running backs. Cincinnati Bengals running back Joe Mixon has agreed to a four-year extension worth $48 million. How that deal will break down is as follows. $10 million signing bonus with a $1.3 million base in 2020, $8 million base in 2021, $8 million base in 2022, a $9.4 million base in 2023, club option for $9.6 million in 2024, $500K each year in playtime, and $200K off-season workout bonus worth bonuses each year. So, Joe Mixon for the Cincinnati Bengals is
getting paid.
Cashing in.
Getting paid.
I think that's the biggest contract since we've seen the Todd Gurley for the Rams.
I got a question. Is he worth it? Is he worth $48 million? Is that roughly 12 million a year? That puts him at what, top five in the league?
Yeah, now, man. I don't think, in my personal opinion, no. If I was the Bengals, I would have waited to see what some other teams do with some other running backs that I would consider better than Joe Mixon. We're going to talk about them a little bit later here. But I don't think Joe Mixon is worth this because the running back position alone is such a hot topic for when you pay them, right? And if you're going to pay them like this, they need to be a superstar in a sense, in my opinion. And Joe Mixon, while he's okay in fantasy, he's a good contributor. I wouldn't give him a superstar status.
I agree, but we can make a case that he's the most underrated running back in football right now.
That does a lot for Cincinnati.
He really does, man. And Cincinnati's just so bad year after year that he'll never really get the credit that he deserves. We can say the same for Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey's, no doubt the best running back in football, but he'll never get the true credit he deserves, even as the best running back in football.
As a running back.
Yeah, because that team just absolutely sucks, man.
And he's such a hybrid person, player,
Right.
Christian McCaffrey. I don't even consider him he's kind of created the flex position. I could start putting people in a flex position now because Christian McCaffrey has created such of a new position where if you can put up 1,000 and 1,000, like you're a whole nother person, you know, and there's nobody, I've never seen it. I've never personally watched it other than him. And I don't know if anybody else right now can even come close to that.
I mean, okay. So here's my thing, right? Here's Joe Mixon's NFL career, right?
Mm-hmm.
From 2017, 2018, 2019, he has 626 yards rookie season, right? Then his next two seasons, 1,168, 1,137. There's consistency. He's got mm-hmm. 8 touchdowns 2018, 5 in 2019. Mm-hmm. But, like, realistically, like,
what's his receiving
1,100,
stats?
It's, I don't have. Oh, receptions, 43 in 2018, 35 in 2019, 296, 287, 3 touchdowns and 1 touchdown. So, he's well-rounded, mm-hmm. but I still don't think that these numbers right here are not what he's getting paid. I think there is a big gap in skill and what he's
getting paid. Because honestly, he just got paid Derrick Henry money.
Yeah, exactly. And
truth be told, yeah.
It's like, are you really going to put him on the same level as Derrick Henry at the moment?
I don't think he's played 16 games in his in one of these three seasons.
I don't think he will. He is a little injury prone.
He is an injury prone type of player, so I'm not a fan of the move.
I have a headline today. I'm going to go to the other side of the running back spectrum. Alvin Kamara is...
There's some drama. There's some drama going on between him and the Saints.
You think, yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, is that...
There's some drama between the Saints and Alvin Kamara?
That's what Josina says.
He was absent, what, the other day?
Last three or four days
of training camp.
Well, there's been reports that he's been
in the building, just not practicing.
Right, you know what I mean.
So
I've heard this story before.
I want to ask you guys: does this get worked out before the season starts?
Well, you saw the news that this came out while you were doing your previous show, right?
I did not.
Came out. No, it's understandable. Mm-hmm. The Saints have come out and said that their priority is to try and re-sign their star running back, but if they're unable to do so, they are open to trading him for a first-round pick.
You
got to
be kidding me, bro.
And then Ian Rappaport came right back on the other side of that and said that he just talked to the agent and Alvin Kamara, and they're not asking or demanding a trade. They're actually looking to negotiate.
There's a lot of miscommunication. Yeah, yeah. If Kamara and the Saints work out a contract, do they make him a top five running back?
You got to. Otherwise, why even?
What's the point of the contract? Yeah. You know?
Now, Alvin Kamara has been very consistent. I mean, last season was his first real season where you was just like the injuries really were there.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the other season, it was.
Well, he's also had Mark Ingram, around.
That, and I think Mark Ingram was the one that kind of had the injury problems, which is why they kind of let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because they trusted Alvin Kamara more. And I think they just need to trust him in this situation.
Because they're moving more to the hybrid. Well, Alvin Kamara is, I think, exactly what Christian McCaffrey is, just on a little smaller scale.
He is, but we also got to remember the Saints are maxed out on their cap. They got no more money to spend when Drew Brees has gotten there in a really bad spot.
So where's the money coming from?
Over $30 million plus the cap.
I don't know if they have the money to sign Kamara. They might need to wait for this season to be over and try and franchise tag him and do that whole game. But there's also the possibility of a holdout there and then the trade. So I don't know if they have the funds to secure Alvin Kamara long-term like they'd hope to.
All right, so a trade. Trade, a pick. Is he worth a number one?
He is worth a first
round. Not a number one pick. I'm talking about a first round.
If you are an offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. that it will emphasize getting the ball to the running back out of the backfield. You know, if the running back has got a significant role in your scheme as a pass catcher while also getting carries, you trade the first round pick for him because right now he's the best option on the market for what you want to do.
Right.
But if that's not you, if you're a pounded up the middle guy, which Kamara can do, he's not worth the first round pick for me. And it's kind of situational. KJ, what do you think here?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I just think that Alvin Kamara needs to just be honest with himself and say, if I can't get a contract done this season, let's play this time. If you guys don't want to do a contract next time, let me walk.
Yeah.
Easy.
KJ, you do have a headline for us today.
Well, actually, I'll get to mine in another segment.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I will let Ty go ahead and
go ahead, Ty.
Headline.
All right, last running back headline, we swear, we promise. But first, I got a bit of sound related to this.
I mean, that's a question that, you know, obviously Dave can answer more involved in. My question was, you know, can we get any value? And it was we couldn't get any. So we couldn't get anything.
That was Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone about trying to trade. Yeah. Ouch.
They couldn't get any value, huh?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Couldn't get any value.
They were doing their damage to trade him.
What you shouldn't have done is got rid of him, is what you shouldn't have done. What's the point of getting rid of Leonard Fournette? I mean, honestly, if you look at stats, he's got top five stats in the last 3 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
but he's an injury concern.
Injury
prone. You're gonna have to throw some money at him here, and there's always that stigma of paying a running back.
I think they made the right decision as a business decision, but I mean, who's really gonna step up and fill that shoe?
I'm going to say this, and I said it in the pre-show. I think he needs to take a page out of Adrian Peterson or call him up. And what I mean by that is, Adrian Peterson is an elusive all-around back. Leonard Fournette needs to learn how to do that if he's going to be able to stay in the league.
He can't just be a bruiser.
Trent Richardson tried it. Derrick Henry tried it. It works.
Guys,
it works for different guys.
Have you not seen Leonard Fournette's spin move? is sick.
Oh, and by the way, before I forget,
before
credit
he falls
to
over.
Jaguars.com.
go ahead, Ty.
Credit to Jaguars.com for that.
Oh, Jaguars.com. Thank you guys for that bit on Leonard Fournette, yeah. Former LSU.
Where's the best spot for Leonard Fournette?
Right now,
bruising back.
I definitely think
like for an upcoming team,
this team doesn't have like a true number one, and they could use somebody to play alongside what they think is their number one. And I'm not trying to be biased here, but I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, because James Conner is also injury prone. They don't have a number one. Like, no disrespect to all of those guys, but they are solid number twos and threes.
I'll tell you this:
those guys are number one.
I'll tell you this: I may not totally agree, but I think he'd do well in Tampa.
I think he should go
to the Bears, though. The Bears, or rather, the Bears should go after
the Bears. They're going to have the same record as the Jags.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah. I think that makes sense. So they want to bruise him back.
David Montgomery just went down.
Not to mention, it gets cold.
Tariq Cohen's there. So.
Tariq Cohen's going in between the tackles for you? Tariq Cohen's getting that.
I look, 5'7", 5'8", 180.
Tariq Cohen trying running the goal line to get sent back 4 yards.
Yeah, no, you ain't lying. But like KJ said, you can't be just a bruiser these days in the NFL. I mean, like we've said, there's one, maybe two guys that can just run them down, and that's Derrick Henry, and I mean, I'd say like Nick Chubb, but he's not even that big.
Derrick Henry doesn't count. Derrick Henry is 6'3" and a half.
6'3" and 240 pounds, and he's a monster. And he's fast.
Bigger than most linebackers. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And he looks at linebackers like they look at him, and he just runs them down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, those were our headlines for today. We are going to take a quick break and come back with some more NFL talk, guys. Broncos are on the other side of the break. This is the Press Box on GoMileHigh.com and part of the Be On Air Network.
So I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. Oh. See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed 2 eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama.
Uh-huh.
They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Pretty young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing!
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
this is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
And we are back, guys, here on the Press Box on GoMileHigh.com. I'm part of the Beat On Air Network. I'm still with KJ, the GOAT TT, and Tanner Fuge. Man, we got a lot of football about to be happening. 9 days till the season officially gets underway. And the Broncos are not offensively, I would say, looking too great.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to be rude to the hometown here, but we have I have not seen a significant uptick in the offense like we thought that they would be doing.
Well, there's a few things that factor into that. You know, the first of which is that it's a good thing that there's a good and a bad of that. I mean, the Broncos defense is doing its job adequately and is performing well. There's also, this is the first year that Pat Shurmur is trying to incorporate this offense with Drew Lock and a very young offense. You know, probably the oldest skill position is Melvin Gordon at 27 years old. And the defense, on the other hand, is in their second year of this new Vic Fangio system. So there's some more familiarity on that side of the football this training camp than before. So, and realistically, defense is usually easier to accomplish than running an offense right off the gate. So there's minor advantages there as well. So I think it's not too much of a worry right now. Yeah, it's not ideal that Drew Lock and the Broncos offense is getting a slow start here with Pat Shurmur at the helm, who just, I heard he was spiking his playbook around earlier today.
I heard there was a few pick sixes this week.
Oh, I've heard there's been, a lot of picks.
I heard, the uptick in pick sixes.
A lot of picks, a lot of poor protection around the edges.
Yeah.
But again, I'm worried about it, but I don't think it's detrimental. I don't think this is a direct insight or any type of foresight on what the season's going to be.
I agree. The real problem here is this offensive line. Like, the offensive line is atrocious right now. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're going to do. The inside is okay. They got Glasgow and they got Reisner. Still trying to figure out the center situation. They think it's going to be Cushenberry, but they're still not for sure. The tackles are looking terrible.
I think it's
got to
be Cushenberry, man. I think he's just so much more of a
He was talented
option.
Coming out of LSU. He's talented.
Highly talented.
No, Cushenberry is nice.
He's a smart kid, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he can pick up an offense pretty well. So, I just don't understand. Like, when you look at the Broncos offense, man, I just think they got all the skill positions, man, but the interior – has to get right they're going to potentially make a run to the playoffs.
You're worried about the interior. I think the interior, I feel
I
very
it was
comfortable
fine.
With the interior.
Yeah,
the,
I think
interior,
it's okay.
Interior is fine as long as Glasgow is in.
Yeah.
But Glasgow's been missing the past few practices.
I mean, you got to think about it. You got Garrett Bowles, Dalton Reisner, Lloyd Cushenberry, Graham Glasgow, and Elijah Wilkinson right now sitting on the depth chart as number ones.
I am a firm believer DeMar Dotson is just –
DeMar Dotson is a great, great player. I think he's going to overtake Elijah Wilkinson, but I'm saying right now he's sitting.
I think he's going to be a starter because they simply don't want him getting risking an injury in training camp. He's got a 10-year resume from all these seasons in the NFL. I think they know his capability. They just don't want him getting hurt. Mm-hmm. Realistically, I think they're seeing if Elijah Wilkinson can handle the left side while kind of playing him at right while DeMar Dotson chills out. But I'm confident DeMar Dotson, once the season rolls around, that he can pick it up and be something for the Broncos. It's going to be that left tackle position.
Yeah. Like it always is. And let's go back to training camp. The defense has been pretty much whooping tail. But I think, I heard our guy Andy say it earlier today, you don't really know how good the defense truly is because of how far behind the offense is. Mm-hmm. They've only had a few weeks to try to really put this scheme actually on the field and try to learn it and correct their mistakes. I think the defense will probably end up being like a top 10 defense by the end of the season, but
it's going to take a while to get
right,
going.
Yeah. But you just really don't know. And we'll figure out in 13 days. 14 because they play on 13 because they
nine.
Play
I thought it was nine. It was nine.
They're Monday night.
Oh, they're Monday night.
Monday night football, baby.
Monday night.
Yeah.
So, We'll figure it out then, man. But the Broncos had to get it together, man, as far as on the offensive side of the ball, because defense is going to carry their weight. The only thing you worry about is who's going to play number two and number three corner. That's it.
So do you guys still – you guys still got them second place in this division? Even 100%. Even all the offensive woes you guys think
especially
about.
Especially right? With Derwin James going down for the season on the back
and
end of the Tyrell
Williams
defense.
Just went down for the season for the Raiders.
Exactly. So now you're going to be trusting on Ruggs and Renfro right now. I mean, that's a big ask for those two youngsters.
Very, very
so
big ask.
Definitely got the Broncos.
Okay. I agree.
Cool. So is there a weakness to this defense, or is it just – because the offense has not got up to speed?
There's obviously a weakness in the defense. I would make the
Where
argument.
Where is it?
Well, KJ kind of just alluded to it. The cornerback 2 and 3 position after A.J. Boye is a question mark. You know, Bryce Callahan is still there, but he did not contribute a whole lot, if any, last
year. A.J. Boye was great. You know,
A.J. Boye is great, but he's the one. Yeah, but the 2 and 3, Bryce, is it going to be Bryce Callahan? Is it going to be Ojemudia, the rookie out of Iowa, right?
Yeah.
Is it going to be Devontae Bosby? That's the thing. There's no bona fide security there, but that's a popular issue.
Devontae Harris, from what I've heard over the reports, is looking to be a shoe-in to be the nickel corner at number three. But they may need him to slide outside if they can't get a true number two to kind of step up and defend that.
I think Ojemudia in the cover two scheme is kind of exactly what Fangio wants there, a tall, lengthy guy that can play the field, read the eyes, do some good zone coverage, and isn't afraid to go make a tackle on the edge.
What about Bosby?
I'm going to see people like Bosby. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Bosby.
There's a Bosby hater.
Well, just because here's my thing is I saw him in training camp last year, and every time I saw him in training camp, he was getting torched. And then the Broncos last year released a hype video of the receivers looking all good in training camp. 9 out of 11 times, they showed one of the receivers making a sick cut, it was Devontae Bosby covering him. So it's like I couldn't get on board there.
Yeah.
So are you guys – let me ask this as a table. Are you guys worried about the offense? Or we've been talking about, or is it just too early to tell?
It's too early to tell, man. I've never seen a cake that's been made in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to take time for all of the ingredients to come together and form like the way that it's supposed to work together. The Broncos offense has so much potential and it has so much firepower.
Right.
I just don't think you can give up on it too quickly. Mm-hmm. Give it time to kind of come together. And I think you'll see the best of the Broncos on the back half of the season because the sense of urgency will be there, and I think they will have a familiarity with the scheme by then. So.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as KJ. Yeah. I'm not worried at all. I think I'm actually very excited for this Broncos offense because just comparing my feeling from this season to last season at this point of the year. Last season, we were looking at Joe Flacco, right? Cortland Sutton was the one. Noah Fant could be something. Phillip Lindsay was coming off that big season. And, you know, I wasn't that excited.
It wasn't looking like it is now.
Yeah, this year, you see Drew Locke coming off all of that. There's all these explosive rookies. The Broncos now have Melvin Gordon. So, like KJ said, I think that with all these young players, with a new offensive very experienced offensive coordinator, but new system, and with the COVID times affecting all of that, it'll take longer to come together.
And especially without a preseason, too. There's no preseason to really get real game reps.
If it was still Scangarillo, or if it was another first-year offensive coordinator with all this, I would not be confident. I would not trust him to know how to facilitate the ball.
But with Fangio behind the play calls, you're all right with it.
No, well, with an experienced offensive coordinator like Pat Shurmur, who was calling the plays, who was calling the plays most notably for the Minnesota Miracle year with Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, and the other.
That amazing tackle by the Saints.
Pat Shurmur took the Vikings to the conference championship with three quarterbacks.
He
got smacked, but he got him there with three quarterbacks, so the system had to hold true.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Shurmur was also there the year before with the Eagles, too.
Yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so let's jump to it. Just a tiny bit different. Fantasy-wise, for the Broncos alone, who's going to be my top fantasy wide receiver at the end of the year?
This is going to be Cortland
Man,
Sutton.
Man, I don't know.
Is it?
I don't know.
Is it going to be Cortland Sutton?
Here's why.
Before you go into this, KJ, this is something that you could go either way. So what makes you very – gives you confidence in what you're about to say?
I want to know why you're so confident, Cortland
Sutton. I'm confident in it because Drew Locke is going to force feed Cortland Sutton when all else fails. He can't look to Jerry Jeudy. He's not for sure. He can't look to KJ Hamler. He's not for sure. Noah Fant, he may look to him, but who knows? But he's going to force feed Courtland Sutton when all else fails. Whether the ball gets there or not, if you give Courtland Sutton a 50-50 chance, 75% of the chance on those 50-50 balls, he's going to come down with it. So taking that into consideration, I think Courtland Sutton is going to have roughly 85 to 90 catches this year.
1,200?
Over 1,000 yards. Easy.
See, I would think the argument would be between him and Jerry Jeudy because Jerry Jeudy is a very qualified wide receiver. You know, he's
best route runner in the draft.
Very well polished coming out of college. One of the most well polished receivers ever to come out of college to the NFL. And he's immediately pro ready. And you throw him in this offense where Courtland Sutton is the perceived one, I think that Courtland Sutton could be getting a lot of the coverage, and that could leave Jerry Jeudy open. So, like I said, I'm not 100% confident in what I'm saying. I genuinely don't know because Sutton and Jeudy, to me, yes, they both profile as a one. I know Sutton has a couple of years on him. He's more familiar with Locke, but they are both one-caliber receivers to me.
So Courtland Sutton for KJ and Jerry Jeudy for Tanner.
A very hesitant Jerry Jeudy.
Very hesitant Jerry Jeudy. We're going to take a quick break, guys. On the other side, we're going to talk about the Nuggets and some basketball. Wow, playoffs first round is almost in the books. We are on the press box on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air network.
I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama, you know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence, flowing robes, the grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing. Oh. See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed two eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama. Uh-huh. They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Hurry, young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com. Hurry, young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com. Hurry, young Popsy, we must make it back to Camelot so I can listen to GoMileHigh.com.
Oh, who goes there?
It is I, King Arthur, on his mighty steed. Let me in the castle at once. I must get to my quarters to listen in to the best in Colorado's sports lifestyle programming.
But, sir, don't we live in medieval Wales?
No, Popsy, you mustn't ask questions when I'm listening about my beloved Broncos. Ah, GoMileHigh.com.
Seems to be the never-ending question. It's like...
Coach Thompson? Coach Thompson was saving my life. For giving me the opportunity, I was recruited by every school in the country for football and basketball, and incident happened in high school, and all that was taken away. No other teams, no other schools were recruiting me anymore. My mom went to Georgetown and begged him, you give me a chance. And he did.
Thank you. It's a TNT.
We credit Naismith Hall of Fame.
Okay, sorry, my bad. Credit Naismith Hall of Fame for that. That was John Thompson.
Yeah, that was Allen Iverson talking about John Thompson and just pretty much what he meant to him back in his 2016 Hall of Fame speech. And the same sentiments were then as they are now, as Allen Iverson made his emotional Instagram post the other day talking about, you know, John Thompson. And I just wanted to take a minute and just talk about John Thompson, the first African-American head coach to win a national championship. And he really was the pinnacle in what got the Big East to where they were during the time when they were successful. And
where they are now still.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I just want to take a minute and give big love and big shout out to John Thompson, because he's impacted so many African-American coaches and players. And, you know, he's put out, you know, several Hall of Fame, you know, big men that are some of the best of all time. And, you know, I don't think it can be overstated that what he did at Georgetown was absolutely nothing short of amazing. Not to mention he was willing to sacrifice his season, potentially the entire program, because there were rules that were not in favor of some of his coaches and some of his players back in the late 1980s. So John Thompson was definitely a pioneer, and you have to give love what love is due. So shout out to John Thompson, man. Rest in peace. And, you know, you're gone, but you'll never be forgotten. And, you know, that's one thing that none of us can definitely take for granted is how much he has meant to the game of basketball.
Absolutely.
What was that, KJ?
And not only that, but what Allen Iverson did in his career, mm-hmm. you know, some people would look at an opportunity as John gave him and maybe potentially not do something with it, you know. But Allen Iverson took that and went way above and beyond at the next level to become one of the all-time greats. From my opinion, I think AI is one of the greatest basketball players of all time.
Oh, no question.
One of the most exciting players.
The way he handles the basketball is just absolutely ridiculous. His passing, his shooting, he was just he was the man back when, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say the Sixers were pretty ever on top of – he took the Sixers to an NBA Finals, if I'm wrong, 2001. So the things, like you were saying, the things that John Thompson did for him and Allen Iverson's appreciation, I think, was showed over his NBA career that, hey, you did this for me. Now let me do something for the game of basketball. And I think it's all inspired and it's all inspiring. And I think I hope a lot of people, you know, give, you know, people like AI a chance to make something of themselves, even when you had a mistake, you know, in high school. You know, you're a young kid, everybody makes mistakes, but yeah. College is like we know, they really look at that and say, yeah, well, you're not for us. And then there goes your whole college, you know, career.
Yeah.
So
yeah, shout out to his mom though for yeah, just going for up there and
all the way all the way to Georgetown, just said, hey, come on. Let him play. Just give him a chance. And
you know, him taking a chance on Allen Iverson was the best thing that one of the best things that has ever happened to basketball.
So. Yeah, without a doubt. We're going to jump in on some Denver Nuggets basketball real quick.
Minute to go. Denver using some clock here. Jokic finding Murray. Murray, does he got another one in him? Oh, you bet he does! And that might be the dagger! Wow! Wow! Wow is right! 50 piece for Jamal Murray. Here is Mitchell. No. Porter with the rebound, and the Denver Nuggets look poised to send this one to a game seven behind the sharp shooting of Jamal Murray.
Credit TNT for that soundbite. Boy, the Nuggets, they were on the brink.
Oh, yeah. They didn't show up for two.
Came back. Well, it's not really come back, but have saved themselves.
I'd call it a comeback, man.
I'd call it a great comeback.
In the water,
dead
at one point.
29-27. They lost game four. We're down 3-1. Even Murray put up 50 in that game.
Yeah,
wasn't enough. Murray comes back, puts up 42. Game five, 117-107. The Nuggets come back, and again, Murray puts up 50. and the Nuggets win 119 to 107. You know, I look at this, and the games, other than the first game, where we won, where Denver won in overtime, 135-125. If Utah scores 120 points, they win.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm staring at it. 124, 124, 129. They won all three of those. Other than 125 in overtime, which is in overtime, so I mean it is what it is.
Yeah. Extra minutes. At
least. So the last two were 107 and 107. Uh-huh. Beat them by 10 and then beat them by 12. You think Denver can keep that going into tonight's game?
I definitely think so. If you go back to Game Six and just Game Six specifically. Gary Harris gave them some juice on the defensive side of the ball, and they're starting to figure it out. It took them a while, and that's what coaching is all about, man, not giving up on your guys and just giving them a chance to, even through the mistakes, try to figure this thing out and figure out who has the heart and the grit to continue to fight through this thing. That's what I wanted to see from the Denver Nuggets. I wanted to see, did they have heart and could they figure it out? And they've done both, and they put themselves in a position to where in Game 7 tonight, they have a chance to show the world that, you know, we weren't the number three seed by mistake.
If Murray doesn't hit 40, do they win?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah.
Because the Nuggets still have more people around him.
Not to mention, Michael Porter Jr. will not go 1-7 from the field ever.
With two
again,
points so. On 28 minutes. Yeah, that's preposterous.
Yeah.
This whole season, this whole playoff stretch, this whole bubble stretch, I've been very critical of Jamal Murray. Ever since the Nuggets paid him all that money last year, I have been kind of off and on the Jamal Murray train, citing his inconsistency. You know, we see good spurts, but then I see really bad spurts, and I couldn't get on board with that. But now he has almost, like, heard me and has shut me up directly because, like you were just saying, in his last three, he scored 142 points from Elias. There's only two players in NBA history that have scored more points over a three-game span in the playoffs. That would be Jerry West in 65 and Michael Jordan in 88. And I think this is the first time ever in a series that two players on opposing teams have hit 250-point performances. 50 point,
yeah, him and Donovan, right?
Or
yeah,
Gobert, Donovan Mitchell. And that's in the same series. I think before that it was only Kobe Bryant and one other player. So he's breaking the record books, and he's earning this money, and now he is the hottest player in the NBA, and people are saying to max him.
I've been saying this to you guys for a few weeks now, that Denver keeps giving up over 120 points. And I was saying this, you can't keep giving up 120 points and expect to win playoff games. You know, and my point has pretty much proven myself with, you know, they gave up 124, 124, and 129. They didn't win any of those. But you give up 107, you got a chance. And they did that twice. They won two games. You know, the only one out of conspicuous is the very first game, which we can blow that one off. But, yeah, like I said, if they give up 120 points, Denver loses. Yeah. I'm going to call that tonight. They give up 120, they lose.
Yeah, for sure. Let's look at it on the defensive end of the ball. Let's stay there for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So the two things that Utah does well, pick and roll and drive and dribble. Dribble drive. And in game six here, you saw that they were able to kind of contain a dribble drive a lot better than they have in the first five games. And that was due in large part to the fact that Gary Harris allowed them to rotate better. He helped them to understand, hey, dude, go here, I'll take here. And I think that kind of helped them to understand that we can cut down on some of this driving. And for a period of time there, I think it was like the first 16 to 20 minutes of the game, Utah did not turn the ball over. And once Gary Harris kind of helped them to get in that flow, they started to turn the ball over a little bit.
And the thing is too, the Nuggets' favorite lineup in those first quarters is not really effective at all. The lineup with Millsap and Jokic and Morrison and them, the spacing is really very far off of two because they don't respect Millsap's shot. They don't respect Millsap's offense. Once they switch over to Jeremy Grant and Gary Harris, then the Jazz have to respect the shot, which opens it up for Murray too. So that opens up the defense with, you know, Jeremy Grant's athleticism to help on defense as well with Gary's his knowledge. And because Millsap just can't hang with the guards right now. He's too slow. He doesn't match up well with them at all.
He's too big.
Yeah. And Grant's length and athleticism really helps out against Donovan Mitchell. It helps out against Rudy Gobert and even Mike Conley to an extent.
All right, so quickly, before we get out of this segment, guys, I got two big questions. Obviously, tonight, Houston and Oakland. Oklahoma City. Is that tonight, right?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, excuse me.
Okay.
That's 3-3.
Game 7.
Uh-huh.
Who takes that one? I called this last week. I called this a few weeks before everything started. This was going to be the toughest series.
Man, Chris Paul is the only reason the Thunder were in that game and the reason they won that game. I don't know if he's got that in him again. I don't know if he's got that juice. And I think that the Rockets, with the best score arguably ever, find a way to get this one done because
– And James Harden.
Yeah.
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 I don't like Houston, so I'm going OKC.
You don't like – why you do you not like Houston? Houston?
Is that Houston? You just don't like Houston.
I genuinely don't like Houston. I don't like Russell Westbrook and James Harden.
I don't like Russell. I like James Harden, but I don't like Russell Westbrook.
I think it's
How do the Thunder win tonight? Or not tonight, sorry, tomorrow.
Well, I think it has to do with just making sure that Dennis Schroeder keeps the pressure on him, because when Dennis Schroeder is aggressive at all times coming off the bench – dude, it just gives OKC that extra juice that they need. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, all you need him to do is just, you know, continue to defend well and try to defend Harden as best he can. The reality is the kid Dort, I don't know where this kid came from, but he's a decent defender. I just think they need to continue to keep SGA on him.
Last question before we you know, take a break, guys. Who leads tonight in points, rebounds, and assists? Does Murray do it? Does Murray do all three again for the third time in this series?
You want to know what's funny? I think I was actually having this conversation with somebody earlier. I think this is the Jokic game. This is the game of the Jokic. Yes, because I think there's so much attention on Murray. I don't think Murray's going to have a bad game. I think he's still going to have a great game.
So Jokic needs to step up.
I think Jokic will obviously be there for rebounds. I think that he's going to be facilitating a lot, so he'll get their assists. And could I know he's got Gobert down there, but I really feel like Jokic is due for like a big game score.
30
I
got points? A feeling.
Maybe more. Yeah. Maybe more.
I got a feeling this is going to be a high-paced, high-scoring game. So I think Jokic tonight is going to set the all-time NBA assist record for big man. So for centers.
Wow.
I got KJ Green with me.
So what is that? What is that? How many is that?
Well, I don't know how many the record
15,
is for a center.
16?
But I'm pretty – yeah, I'm if I'm going to put an actual number on it, I think Jokic is going to have 17 assists tonight.
His high in this series right now is 9.
Dude, okay, well, there you go.
The high in the series for this team is 9.
They're going to run through him a lot tonight, and I think he's going to have 17 assists, and I think MPJ and Jamal Murray are going to split between 25 to 30 apiece tonight. So,
well, you heard it right here, guys, on the press box from Tanner and KJ and myself, Squirrel. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with some Avalanche and Major League Baseball. This is the press box on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Beat On Air Network.
So I'm taking a trip over to Tibet, you know, see the sights, climb a hill or two. But I remember, oh man, I got one guy out here who I actually know. So I give an old ringy dingy to the Lama.
What?
You know, the Dalai Lama, his laminescence,
great,
flowing robes, grace, bald, striking really. I says to the Lama, hey, you remember that round I caddied for you down in Shangri-La? Well, apparently some station out in Lakewood taped the whole thing.
Oh.
See, the Lama's a big hitter. Nailed 2 eagles in a row that day. Well, he says, what station could have possibly gotten all the way out to my sacred holy lands, the Shangri? I says it was none other than GoMileHigh.com, Lama.
Uh-huh.
They got the best sports coverage in the state. The Lama actually tips me this time, 2-1. So he pretty much stiffed me again. But I got him hooked on GoMileHigh.com. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
That's great.
GoMileHigh.com.
Hey, Colorado sports fans. You're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torturing yourself, man. Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing!
Every day, across this country, hundreds of college radio stations take to the air, broadcasting music and programming that you won't hear anywhere else.
It's one of the last places where people can really be able to actually say what they want to say.
Without it, you wouldn't have a place for local artists to perform. Certain people need to have a chance, a fighting chance, and college radio is that place for it.
College radio changes the lives of those who are involved with it and can change those who listen to it too.
This is where we start out, you know? From getting all this great experience working in college radio, it makes you want to work in real radio.
College radio means finding yourself. It helped me find what I wanted to do in not only school, but in life.
So support college radio by continuing to listen to this station and supporting the students who make it happen. College radio, now, more than ever. A message brought to you by this station and the College Radio Foundation. For more information, please visit collegeradio.org.
Hey, Colorado sports fans, you're listening to GoMileHigh.com, a student-operated station live from the Colorado Media School Studios here in Belmar, giving you a different perspective on all things current.
Stop torching yourself, man! Live in the now!
So stay tuned to see what's coming up next on GoMileHigh.com, Colorado's sports lifestyle.
Showing!
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Press Box on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. Tanner Foods with me, KJ the GOAT, TT, and I'm your man, Squirrel. We're going to finish it out today on the Press Box, guys, with some Avs and some Major League Baseball, including the Rockies that are right here in the hometown. Avs won last night. Still down 2-3, though, guys.
They are, they are, but after that performance, man.
Five goals in the first period.
Exactly. There's momentum there. You could tell that they were still, because in the game before that, they were down a majority of it, but they had a late surge getting down within one goal in the last couple seconds of the game. So they were really building up on that, and then I think they just kind of kept that momentum and rode it over into this first game here against the Stars, because it was like a goal every minute, and the offensive output was absurd.
Oh, yeah, they're just a second off from the all-time record. In stretches.
Really?
They got four goals in 2 minutes, 36 seconds. Just 1 second shy of the Canadiens in 1944.
Hey, wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
That's nuts, dude. It was five goals in what? 4 minutes and 30?
Four goals in 2 minutes, 36 seconds.
Four goals in two minutes and 36 seconds.
Like, they got one right off the faceoff. That was McKinnon's goal.
Hey, you know what? Okay, everybody enjoyed the first period. Let's go to the second and third period. Let's talk about
the rest of the game where they gave up.
Because I'm telling you, the refs for the NHL last night were comparing to the refs of the NFL. Because they called an absolutely terrible game. You see that.
Now, what's a terrible called hockey game?
A blatant call
that's obvious to see and is missed or not called?
Or you make up some lame excuse as to why it should be called on the other team, which was the Avalanche
NFL
were not
refs,
getting the benefit of the doubt.
Like pass interference happens every play, right? You know what I mean? Holding happens every play,
Every play, yeah.
It's just how likely are you to call it?
When they want to call it and when they don't.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so last night, man, I just felt like it was a lot of tic-tac calls. And I think the refs just need to do a better job of being consistent. You see that these guys are literally trying to come at the Avalanche players and take them out with their sticks from under their legs, and they're trying to, you know, check them up against the glass like every couple of seconds up and down the rink. I'm like, dude, you can't have that all the time. Like, you got to call something. Then if one guy responds, like Nathan McKinnon or Rantanen is, you know, pissed off and says, hey, man, I'm about to go back at this guy and I'm about to, you know, give him one of these, like an elbow, then it's a problem.
Y'all better be ready to fight.
Throw an elbow. That was some real obnoxious goonery from the Stars last night. Especially, like, within the last 5 minutes of the second period, where they were just trying to, where they were just poking, fishing for a penalty, which they got. Like, all of their penalties came off the power play because they were fishing for those freaking penalties that was causing constant stoppages.
When you go down that fast, that early in hockey, man, like, what? Yeah. You're not expecting to win that game, so no. What? I don't blame them. If honestly, if you're the Stars in that situation, maybe you do try and do a little bit of damage, play some mind games. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what they did.
Like, put some money in the bank.
I'm so glad that Burakovsky got them. Like, as soon as they got their power play goal, Burakovsky just shut them up with his answer. That was so satisfying.
Mm-hmm. So, question, guys. Do the Avs bring it home tomorrow, or does Dallas send them home?
I definitely think the Avs do. I got the Avs winning 4-3 tomorrow.
Yeah, and
4-3?
The bettors, the current bettors around the world also agree they have Colorado as a minus 115 favorite on bet lines, and I am with the bettors and KJ. I think riding this momentum, the Avalanche were a superior team coming into this, right? Like they were off that Coyote series, they were expected to crush the Stars. People were saying sweep in five, things of that nature, right? And I think they've just kind of been dealing with a little bit of a funk, almost fighting themselves, right? They've been getting in their own way, whether that be mistakes, not getting up for the games. So I think now that that's kind of subsided and you're seeing good execution kind of in the last let's call it four periods of hockey from the Avalanche, I think that they can keep that going and hand the Stars their business right now.
Yeah, ultimately, they have to play smart. They have to stay centered because if they give the Stars power play opportunities, they're going to lose. And with Khudobin that they have had trouble with, they have had trouble solving Khudobin. They need to get. They need to stay consistent. They need to stay focused.
No, I agree, but I think it also comes down to the refs not calling bull crap calls. Like,
yeah, I mean,
if that's out of the Avalanche.
Well, it is out of the Avalanche, but it does help the Stars when they have all those power plays. That's the only reason that they're even able to get back in games. The game, it was one game they specifically won because of power plays.
Maybe that. Yeah. Maybe this game the Avalanche get those calls. You know what I mean? Maybe it bounces out that way.
Maybe. Hopefully. Who knows?
I mean, hopefully. There's always a chance because the refs might still be pissed off about Pavelski drawing off of them.
Well,
who knows?
Who knows?
But I expect a lower scoring game.
If it was baseball, we could expect no calls, right?
And speaking of baseball, we are actually going to be switching gears to baseball right now. MLB trade deadline. Guys, a lot of big stuff has actually happened. I know you guys are familiar with Cleveland's starting pitcher, Clevinger.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Did he go to the best team possible at the moment? San Diego is soaring. Yeah.
San Diego is definitely
soaring. Like, they are getting it together. They are hot, dude.
Tatis is, like, let's be honest, MVP conversation.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It's probably going to be Padres and Dodgers coming out of the NL.
Honestly, I hate to say it, but I think the Rockies are looking at third. Division.
I hate to say it, too, but shoot.
The Diamondbacks just sold out three of their big guys.
Sent them the freaking
Archie Bradley Miami went, Sterling Marte went, and Robbie Ray are gone.
Yeah, they're blowing it up. They're going to rebuild. They're going full rebuild.
Which I don't understand. I mean, do they need a full rebuild at the moment?
Some teams do. This has been one of those seasons. Look at the Boston Red Sox. Like the Boston Red Sox, they were championship contenters just years ago, and
now they're shipping the Rockies. Kevin Pillar.
Kevin Pillar. Just went to the Rockies from the Red Sox, which I mean they got a lot of good players out there at the Red Sox still.
Yeah.
Xander Bogaerts, Jackie Bradley Jr. I mean, I know they gave away the probably best player in baseball with Mookie Betts, but
Why do all these good players come to the NL West, man? Why is the NL West so stacked up?
Because the Dodgers got so much money, dude.
It is upsetting, man.
I mean, it's like the Dodgers, the Yankees, and maybe one other team that even got that kind of money to play around.
Yankees, and when they're not cheating, the Astros.
It's like if you ain't a bona fide superstar and you're not coming to NL West, you're leaving the Rockies in the NL West.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. And then the Rockies, for some reason, they get rid of all their good people.
That's what I'm saying.
And they send them to the East.
But luckily,
DJ LeMahieu.
They traded for a reliever from the Baltimore Orioles.
Michael Givens.
They traded for their reliever. Hopefully, he can bring some relief to the Rockies because they are struggling to close.
Definitely an upgrade over Camden Yards.
But here's my question,
ballpark
guys.
In the league versus the smallest.
Yeah, Camden Yards is.
Is it too late already for the Rockies right now?
I mean, I think so, dude.
I don't think so, man.
Really?
They got the Giants.
You think they can make a run for the wild card? No. I mean, obviously they're still kind of in position.
They still
got to
play the Dodgers. What, two more times?
Well, yeah, they're only five games behind the Padres right now.
They're five games from second place.
Padres are 22-15. Rockies are 17-18. The Giants are 17-18.
Let's say they win this home series against the Giants. They got them today and tomorrow. Today and Wednesday. And then they go play the Dodgers this weekend. And then they got the Padres again. I think if between the Dodgers and Padres, if you can get just half of that, I think you're good. Because after that, you got the Angels. And then after the Angels, you got the Athletics.
And you look at the rest of the National League, man. They're the – the second place teams in the East and the Central are 15-15, 13-13, or sorry, 16-18 and 15-15. So, like, they're not that good. You just need to take second in the West.
Quick question before we jump out, guys. Do they make the playoffs?
I don't think so.
Nope.
No, we're all in agreement. They do not. You heard it right here, guys, on the press box. The Rockies are not making the playoffs this year. This is the press box on GoMileHigh.com, a part of the Be On Air Network. Tanner, KJ, Squirrel, and Ty on the board. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you tomorrow. Adios.